This episode is brought to you by Adobe XD. Adobe XD is the collaborative platform for experienced designers to design and prototype engaging user experiences. Stay tuned to hear how XD helped me make a product I'd been trying to get greenlit for nearly 4 years possible. Yes, 4 years.
The passion for doing your best work is way too precious to be extinguished by an unhealthy creative culture or a negative environment. The human beings on the other receiving end of the experiences we're creating also can't settle for anything less than the best. Is advocacy for people with disabilities being shortchanged? All those kind of things. Procedurally, personally, we cannot afford anything less than the best.
Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview UX superheroes who fight for the users in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Greetings, User Defenders. Welcome. This is episode 4 of 4 in my Land a Job in UX series. I couldn't be more thrilled to wrap this series up with my buddy Justin Dower discussing the ever-important topic of finding the right cultural fit. Because listen, Defenders, I know you. I know you, and I know that many of you are trying to get your foot in the door, and you're eager, and you're sort of ready to pounce on whatever door opens. And I totally get that. And I'm not saying that that's going to be the wrong decision necessarily, especially while you're trying to, again, to get your foot in the door. However, I will say that it will help you a great deal if you can buy yourself a little time to vet the company that you're looking to jump into and make a difference at. Because if it's the wrong culture, if they don't truly care about their people, you're going to be, even though you're going to be able to put something on your resume, you're going to be thwarted in your effort to make a difference. And that is unfortunately a fact. So stay tuned, listen closely and take notes. This is really, really important episode. It could quite literally save your life. So check it out and please enjoy. I'm glad you're here. Welcome to this very special episode. This is an addition to the important Landing a Job in UX series that I have going on here. There's some incredible guests, and my guest today is certainly no exception. He is also a friend, which is great. So this feels more like a conversation. Like I don't feel like as nervous like I got a TT as often, because I have my friend on the other side of this, Justin Dower. So Justin is he's a Chicagoan, a proud Chicagoan at that. And I'm going to touch on some bullet points here through his bio, and just so you can kind of get a sense, he was with me. He's a repeat superhero, which is, I love having repeat guests on the show. And he was in a very important interview all about his new book that was just released called Cultivating a Creative Culture. And so I highly recommend checking that one out, Defenders, after this. But yeah, so that's when we talked last, but we're going to really drill in on the whole kind of interview side of finding that right culture for you as a creative person. So, he's been at this for a couple decades plus. And so he's seen the evolution of the web. He's seen the evolution of this field. And he is a vice president of UX and development for a company called BeSwift. But he's also got many side hustles. He's a super creative guy. He's got a lot of things going on, irons in the fire. And he's a speaker. He actually keynoted the Midwest UX, which was incredible, by the way. We'll link to that as well. And let's see. Also, the host of the podcast called Creative Culture, right? Is it Creative Culture?
Creative Culture Podcast. Correct.
I should know this because I'm a co-host.
You're in the ballpark. That's all right.
Okay, great. Yeah, and that's been fun. I just joined Justin about two episodes ago. Correct. And so we're kicking it off this new year as well. So we'll be sure to keep tabs on that. And as far as the last time I checked, he eats a bowl of cereal every night before bed. Every night. night,
yes.
Do you still do that?
I do. That is an evergreen factoid, so you could always pull that one out for sure.
Awesome. All right. Well, awesome. That was, I think that's an apt enough introduction to you, my friend. And we're talking about the finding the right cultural fit. What does that mean? And, you know, can you define that for us listening? Can you define that? What is a cultural fit?
Yeah, absolutely, Jason. First of all, thank you for the intro. I appreciate the kind words.
Absolutely.
Cultural fit. I mean, it's kind of a broad thing, and in some ways, defining cultural fit. I mean, that is, there are certainly some core tenets of a healthy creative culture, but that it can also be a subjective thing based on what people, you know, get the most value out of. That said, to me, a cultural fit can be defined as, you know, the environment that will ultimately best respect your humanity and your uniqueness, facilitate your growth in your craft, and ultimately support, you know, you doing your best design or programmatic work. So, you know, those are broad buckets, admittedly, but if you dig into that a little bit, like I said, humanity and uniqueness, that could be qualified as work-life balance or diversity and inclusion in team composition or even processes you're advocating for human beings. You know, growth and craft, that could be career development. That could be conference, offsite camp offerings, things like that, association memberships, support in doing your best work. Does the business have a healthy product development lifecycle process? You know, e.g., are you making things look good? And I'm air quoting, you can't see that, making things look good. Or are you advocating for human beings holistically? Is time being given to refuel or recharge? I like to say, are you given time to pause with intent in the office space? Are you given time to mutually inspire one another? Is leadership collaborative, empathetic? Are they invested in your growth and success? Or on the other side of the coin, are they ego-driven micromanagers? So, you know, that's a fairly bloated response, but to the core aspect of, you know, respect toward your humanity and your uniqueness, facilitating your growth and support. You know, you look at those three words, respect, facilitate, and support. Those are the three action words, and I think those are kind of the three things you want to, you know, make sure are keenly there in any cultural fit based on how you define it.
Okay, that is very helpful. I appreciate that on the outset because that gives us kind of a good understanding of sort of what we're going to be talking about today. Why is it vital, Justin, to find the right cultural fit, especially as a designer or a developer?
Sure. I mean, you know, there will always be trends in what we do, just to get a little macro for a second. So with UX, there's trends in process and deliverable. You know, wireframes are everything, wireframes are nothing. Or, you know, there are always, you know, read me kind of headlines in that sense. Visual communication, there's design language, or there's the animated lava lamp GIF. There are always trends in what we do. Human-centered design, the empathetic human connection is something that's timeless. That is something that is evergreen. So finding the most apt cultural fit, which of course is inclusive of connection, of project process, support for growth, like we just talked about, that needs to be paramount in a designer or dev's job search. I mean, this is the business that is going to support you and the work you do and your evolution. So, you know, you might look for things like a job title that is the best fit. And of course, that's a factor in it. But a culture that is going to support you keenly as a human being and in process and growth, that is why it is absolutely vital.
And I want to take a second to plug your book because it is so good. It's Cultivating a Creative Culture. And, you know, I think we talked a little bit about this last time, but I want to kind of touch again, like, what was it about this topic? Was it something that happened in the past with you, like at a certain workplace or experiencing really poor leadership? Was it like, can you touch on some of the reasons that you really made this kind of a life's mission, so to speak?
Certainly. I mean, the reason I wrote the original List Apart article, it was called Resetting Agency Culture. And what's different from that to the title of my book, ultimately, of course, is the agency delineator. And at the time I wrote that article, I was in the agency sector. I've kind of vacillated between agency side and tech side and design studio side, that triumvirate across my entire career. Agency side always has some inherent, at least in terms of my exposure, some inherent issues culturally. So I wrote that article because I was feeling it at that point. That's where I was at with my role and my evolution as a designer and in my career. So I wrote this article. I pitched the idea to a List Apart. it resonated with them. I worked with their awesome editorial staff to, bring the piece to fruition. And it really resonated. This was the eureka moment with me. It really resonated transmedia. I was giving feedback from people in print and radio and television and design, of course, as well in the agency space. What the eureka moment there for me was, is that this was not about the agency connection. This was about the human connection. It was bigger than the agency space. So I always come back to, this is not about pseudoscience and new age crystals and things, which are, some people might find wonderful. That's fine. This is about tying back to human-centered process, human-centered connection, human-centered growth. And this is something, you mentioned my job title at the beginning, VP of Human-Centered Design. This is something I'm tremendously passionate about. So culture, of course, is the underpinning. This is something, we just talked about, of all of that. The culture supports you in everything you do, and the culture should permeate interactions at the office. It should permeate the project process. It should permeate the deliverables and our goals. So that was the kind of the foundation for writing this book. And, I mentioned this when we were talking off mic earlier, that I'm working on the second version of the book now that gets more into the human-centered design side of things and how that is a core part of this kind of connection as well. So human-centered design is, my true passion and what my air quotes day job is, but the culture and a healthy creative culture surrounding it is absolutely paramount. So that's why I evangelize that so much, because really these are all just pieces of the same puzzle.
Mm. Yeah, I can't wait for this, your follow-up as well, because I really enjoyed it. And I'm not just saying this because I'm your friend and because there's thousands of people listening to this right now, but... I sincerely enjoyed reading your book. You're a really great writer, and you just have a way with words, and just really taking a topic that's really ambiguous in many ways and just kind of breaking it down into a human-centered language, a way that we can understand. So I'm really super excited to kind of see that follow-up. And I touched on kind of some of the reasons that this is such an important topic for me. And, as humans, we want to, psychologically, we are designed to kind of always be seeking homeostasis. We always want to, and that's for a good reason. There's survival kind of things involved with that. We always want to kind of find that balance of that kind of wellness in our lives. And I was just kind of, it's been several years since I had that awful experience that I described in our earlier interview.
Yep.
And I sort of, you kind of start to heal, through. And here's the thing. Time doesn't, especially with the death of a loved one, time does not heal. It does dull the pain. And I think that also relates to other really painful experiences in life, including working in an awful culture. I mean, so I kind of had, it's been several years, and I started to think about, just before our interview, actually just minutes before we got on the phone, I opened up my notes app here on my computer, and I kind of found that my exit interview that I wrote out at that job. And I was very, very honest in that exit interview. And I actually just started skimming through it, and it kind of opened up some wounds for me again. Just thinking about how I was treated at this job and treated inhuman. I was treated like I didn't matter at all. And I was hired in the leadership role too over there. And there were some things that I had kind of forgotten about. Again, my brain's way of kind of protecting me, right? Of kind of the sure. self-preservation, right? And there were a couple things that I had actually kind of forgotten about because they hurt so much. And one of them was the fact that on the way out, and again, defenders, check out, I don't want to go into the whole story, but you can check out our Justin and my first interview at userdefenders.com/CCC, and you can hear kind of a little bit more of that story. But one of the things on my way out of this role, it wasn't just that, even though budget was cited for me being let go, he was hiring new people into my department. In fact, a guy to replace me. It was so blatant. It was so just dehumanizing.
That's a great segue. When I have when I have a team member come to me and, you know, someone is having trouble with process, or someone's having trouble with a deliverable or something, you know, someone on the other side of someone we're interacting with, client or internally, and, you know, there's some trouble there. I always bring that human-centered, you know, when we're doing a human-centered design process and we're doing observation and we're doing, you know, we're analyzing or we're doing research, we have to put ourselves in the shoes of the other people we are advocating for or designing for. So I always try to bring that human-centered thinking back into the cultural interactions at work. So if somebody comes to me and they're having trouble with a deliverable, or, you know, this person isn't stepping up to the plate, I always say, let's pause for a second and put ourselves in their shoes. What else can be going on here with them? Let's think about, before we rush to judgment, what else might be going on? And when we kind of pause and let the initial, energy of coming into the room, and I'm going to talk to, you know, my manager about this, when we kind of let that diffuse and we can actually have a calm conversation about it, we always get to something. There's always something there. So to your story just now about what was, how you were treated, and, you know, you were let go because of budget, but at the same time they're staffing up. I mean, the empathy there was just, it was devoid. It was an empathy vacuum. So that to me is hard to connect with, because I think based on what we do, we advocate for people and we observe and we research and we're empathetic just inherently. But I mean, it's hard to connect to a dynamic like that, because it is hard to put yourself in someone's shoes and say, you know, I remember this story. You moved your family across the seaboard effectively. And you were, you know, this is how you were treated. And that, you know,
right.
At the time, I can't put myself in your shoes. I'm sure that was insanely challenging, but, you know, look where you are now, and look how you built yourself back up, and you use that experience as a learning experience, and you've grown from it, and that is so key.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate you chiming in on that and helping to kind of explain how I felt. I started getting emotional, and it's kind of hard for me to think when I get emotional. So yeah, thanks for bringing that in. And this is a listener question, Justin, from Fatima. I think her handle is Fatty UX, FAATIUX. Yeah. And I was so delighted to get this question from her. I think it was a really thoughtful question. And defenders listening, you all can relate to this, I think, in many ways, especially as a newer designer. So here's her question. It's really great.
If you're new to the field, how do you avoid taking the first offer you get? Or do you recommend taking the first offer? Everyone tells me to apply everywhere. Is this a good plan?
This is an awesome question. Like you said, Jason, everyone starting out in their careers has been there. I think this is almost a unanimous thing. So I appreciate this question from Fatima. Taking an offer, accepting the first or the fifth offer, it can be extremely case dependent. So I'll put that out there straight away. This is not going to be a blanket answer. I can give you a response based on myself as a job seeker and, you know, having hired and built teams over the years, being on the other side of that. So by and large, I would say, see what your options are as best you can before taking a first offer. If you get a first offer and it is crystal clear and extremely lucid that the stars are aligning, the salary's there, the growth is there, the culture is there, the team is there, they're doing phenomenal work, I mean, then it's clear. Sometimes that's not possible because, you know, businesses give deadlines. I mean, a business is a business. They have to staff up. So they'll say, you know, I need to hear back from you by, you know, you interviewed Wednesday, here's your offer. We need to hear back to you by Monday or Friday. And then it's challenging at that point. And you might even think, what kind of business would give me a deadline? So this answer, I'll tell you, is going to be a little muddy. So there's that side of things. We can circle back for some clarity. In terms of applying everywhere, first and foremost, pick an industry or a business or a cause that you're passionate about. This one I can speak to with extreme clarity. Because this is the business that is ultimately going to support you completely. Is this agency work? Is this healthcare, where you're, you know, the healthcare system in our country is a mess, more so now than ever? Is it studio projects with a wide range of clients? This business, and I just said this, will be the home to your abilities, your passion, and the evolution of your career and your work for the next X number of years. So you have to choose wisely in this capacity. The business's pillars and their business and their process will be the lens through which your design is produced. And that is an absolutely precious process. So certainly don't put all your eggs in one basket. I would not apply to a company just because the role they're promoting matches a title that sounds good or matches a title that sounds apt for your career evolution. Be very selective in your applications, even if they're copious. So sending out, applying everywhere, yes, but to a point, apply everywhere that, you know, everywhere that is a good ultimate fit for you. Because if they extend you an offer and you go in with that momentum, you don't want the surprise to happen with you. And that's happened to me. I believe that's happened to you. Mm. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you're hungry at that point, you know, either literally or to grow. And when a company either throws a lot of money at you or they respond quickly, there can be a, you know, that feels good. And you might, the synapses are firing at that point. And it feels, you know, this company wants me. And there's
dopamine,
a lot of money.
Serotonin. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Neurochemicals fire on. Yeah, you're right.
So, you know, I said pause with intent before, and I use that towards dynamics in the office. I use that in business. Pause with intent here on getting an offer too, and pause and think about what the implications are here. Even if you're just coming out of a role, or coming out of school, I should say, or you're exiting a role and it's toxic and you apply to one and you get an offer, of course the first thing is going to be, now I can jump ship. I'm going to take this role. It's a challenging thing, and I'm not saying it's a trivial matter. It's a non-trivial thing to pause and say, is this ultimately the right fit? Because, like I said, this can have long-term implications, and we'll talk about not settling later and things like that with your career evolution, but... you know, again, to apply, certainly apply liberally, but make those liberal applications roles that you ultimately would find a good fit for you holistically.
That's so good. I, for example, and this is an just something off the cuff here, like I feel like a lot of us as designers, and I raised my hand too because I did the same thing. We see a company that's doing awesome things, and they most commonly have a large brand attached to them. It's a big brand name, and a company that's innovating, doing exciting things. And of course, as designers, we're drawn to that. You know, I want to be a part of that, and that's awesome. It is awesome. But I want to use Apple for an example, right? Let's say Steve Jobs, Apple. Dude, that guy changed the world with, you know, with his leadership on technology, and many humans in the world have one of his products in their pockets right now. But how, I mean, we don't know what it's like to actually be inside indoors and like working under, you know, a leader that may not be a very good one. I may not be, you know, and that's putting it lightly. And certainly we know Steve Jobs was an incredible innovator, but, you know, word has it, he was also kind of a jerk, you know, to his people. He kind of treated his people pretty terribly sometimes. So I guess what I'm trying to get to is, you know, what are the best ways to vet a company culture before we even start submitting our resumes and, you know, blasting out our resumes? You know, are there techniques that you found that are really helpful in this process?
That's a fantastic question. Let's start with bigger brands. So I won't hone in on a brand specifically, but you cited Apple. So let's say any large tech firm that, like you said, is doing good work and is changing the industry and is innovating, and it probably seems externally like a great place to work, and you start doing your research. So first I'll say do research on your business. So you start doing your research, and you see, okay, they're doing awesome work, and the work is siloed out into this unit and that unit, and there are different product categories. And oh, look, they have sleep pods. If I'm overworked, hell, I could go in this little sensory deprivation chamber and sleep on the job. Or, oh, I noticed that if I have to work late, they'll send a cleaning crew to my house, or they'll pay for a cab. And that on the surface sounds awesome. But
yeah, every meal provided. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Here's the pause with intent again. Think about what is the other side of that. The other side of those perks can be, I won't say this is universal, it can be toxic, and that is setting your expectation that you are signing your life away at that point to always be at the office. You know, the sleep pods are conducive to pausing because you're probably overworked and staying past five. Why are people, why are they sending cleaning crew to your house? Because you're going to be there. You're not going to be home to do your own cleaning. Or why are they paying for a cab? because maybe public transportation is dried up by the time you have to get home. So I'm just saying, go in when you're vetting a company, do not have blinders on any capacity. Just because the brand sounds great and you have this product in your pocket, or you have the logo on your shoes or something like that, you have to dig into what might be the other side of those factors or their perks. So doing research beyond a 1 to 2 paragraph description about this business on a LinkedIn job ad is huge. Don't just let the marketing copy define the lens through which you perceive this company. So their brand story, how they position themselves, their work, their culture on their site, their pillars through which they produce work or perceive themselves, those things are absolutely key. So I said brand story. A company tells its brand story outwardly to connect to its users and to keep them engaged and to build relationships. You know, how the organization came to be, why its employees are charged to come to the office, why they produce the work that they do. So in your research, when you're looking at their brand story, does this resonate with your ethics? Does this resonate with your career evolution? Does this resonate with your passion to create? So, I mean, it could be as simple as when you're looking at their website, where does people or culture fall in the navigation? Is it first? Is it last? Is it there at all? When you look at their website, who is listed under leadership or, you know, on the about page? Is it leadership? Is it C-level only? Are you seeing the people who are actually making the work? Is there a lifelike, you know, or life at section on the site? What does a day in the life look like in this site? Is something like that even present on the site? Some businesses, they blow that section out the most about, you know, their cultural manifesto, or what is a day in the life like, or little vignettes about employees speaking about what a day in the life is like. Talk to them, you know, as best you can. Reach out to these people. I keep talking about the human-centered approach. And this one is the one that might cause the needle scratch in the record the most for people. But this one's a little, so we keep talking about human-centered and the human connection. I would say if you genuinely are passionate about this business, try to take it a step further than tossing a PDF over the digital fence of your resume. So as best you, I mean, some businesses are you know, clearly they're very busy, and there's HR, you know, that kind of is in receipt of resumes, and you can't talk to a person physically. But I can tell you this, I've worked in an agency before, Jason, where I was a creative director. And at this agency, two different times, people knocked on the door and just walked into the space. And one time it was a fellow who walked in, and he was seeking a designer role, but he had not really done his homework on our business or what we were about. And he walked into the space, and it was different. This person's coming in there, and they're introducing themselves. And, you know, my curiosity was piqued enough where I got up and I went over and I introduced myself, and we talked a little bit, and he had his business card and his resume, and he was just, you know, kind of doing, he probably had stops along the way for the day, and he was just, you know, knocking on doors. And, you know, I respected someone who wanted to, respected their approach in that sense to kind of connect with a human being. Another time someone did the same thing. Knocked on the door. I was a little busy that day. It was, and I didn't interact with them specifically, but they had done their homework about, I am knocking on the door because I've looked into the work that this company does, and they knew about myself, and they knew about other members of the team, just based on doing their research. And they were expressing that they felt like they would be a good fit based on those things. And I followed up with them. I thought, that was, you know, the human-centered approach again, that was intriguing to me, and that was curiosity. Again, I was too busy that day, and I wasn't available, but they were putting themselves out there, and I respected that at the end of the day. So multiple ways to vet a company culture before submitting your resume. I mean, if you're submitting, you know, to like Google, air quotes knocking on the door might not be the best way to go about it. If it's an agency of 50 people, or if it's a smaller a business, it might be a little more accessible thing to do at that point. So I'm not saying these are blanket solutions by any means, but if we're putting the human-centered connection at the core of everything, and I think that is permeating through this incredibly bloated answer I'm giving, that is what we have to hang our hats on throughout that process.
So I've been trying to get an internal product built for nearly 4 years now. Don't ask. and it finally got greenlit recently. The kicker? Due to a large business pivot on the IT side, the dev team has a very limited time window to build out the MVP. Well, thanks to Adobe XD, I already had the blueprints. I was able to quickly design, test, and gather feedback on my prototypes before the business decision was even made. So the next time your stakeholders or engineers like Howard Hughes say, "Show me all the blueprints, blueprints," you can confidently fire up Adobe XD and say, "Here they are." Don't wait 4 years. Download XD for free and experience design already ahead of its time at userdefenders.com/XD. That's great advice, Justin. And I want to kind of piggyback on Fatima's question earlier. You know, be careful about the spray and pray, you know, with your resume. I mean, it's something that's natural. We want to do that, especially if we're really... And here's the thing, I know you're hungry to get your foot in the door, and that's awesome. Hang on to that passion, and that's what's driving you to be a part of this. It took me 2 years to get my foot in the door. I started in 1997 trying to get into a company, and really it was any company. I felt like I just want to do this, and I wasn't thinking about culture at the time. And you know, but you know, be careful about the spray and pray. You know, try to bide your time if you can. You know, I guess just temper that. I mean, just really try to take that extra time to vet as best you can to vet the company culture. Trust me, trust us. It will save you a lot of heartache. And maybe that experience you might get, it's subjective as to whether or not it's going to be worth, you know, being treated like crap at your job. There's some people that hated working for Steve Jobs and hated his leadership style, but then there's other people that are like, I loved it. Like, I loved the punishment that he rendered unto me, you know, and you know, kind of beat me up at 3 a.m, you know, to get something shipped by 6, you know, things like that. It's really subjective. I think it's just kind of your personality too. Think about it. I mean, logic tells me it's never worth it to be treated inhumane. Logic tells me that. So I think it's up to you to determine whether or not it's worth just jump in somewhere where you may not be, you know, where the culture is not, may not be great, but you might get some good experience from it for a resume. And maybe that's part of your plan. I don't know. That's kind of a gray area. What do you think about that, Justin? That's just something that came to me right now. Is like, is it worth it to jump into a company that's like an Apple or a Google? Knowing that the culture and the expectation is going to not be great for you, but to gain that experience, to maybe jump into a better culture? Like, what have you thought about that before?
I mean, you make a great point there, Jason. I want to asterisk a lot of what we're saying is that subjectivity does kind of apply across the board here. So like I said, respect, I think, is something we could absolutely hang our head on in terms of what is a good fit for people, or how you're treated, or how you're advocated for. Some people, a good culture fit for them is coming into their desk, putting their headphones on, and this is the culture of the environment, and producing work and clocking out of 5, 9 to 5, doing my work, I'm producing, I'm done. And that's fine. I mean, that's a healthy fit for them. And that's the kind of work they want to be doing. And that is their good fit. Like I said, still respect, empathy, advocacy, you know, just a healthy culture in that sense. I think that is universal throughout. If you know, you need some of the things we're talking about in this interview are more your cup of tea, or you know, speak to your evolution and are more apt toward your work as a designer, that's fine too. So there's certainly a baseline there. You know, like you say, getting your foot in the door towards a company, as long as, like I said, your blinders are off and you know what you're getting into. Apple, you know, I'm sure their culture is great in many respects, but at the same time, it is a product-driven company, and we know what is inclusive many times of culturally what a product-driven company or an agency, like I talked about before. So just having a crystal clear view, the long view of what is going on there, as long as that's present and you can hang your head on that, then I think that's perfectly fine.
In your book, you talk about the mutual interview. And I love that. I love the sentiment behind that. And it's basically, Defenders, it's to describe it, it's basically, you know, when you're in an interview, it's you're there to answer questions, right? Just like Justin is here to answer my questions today. It's kind of that same sense. But typically, how often do you actually do you realize that you're going to have a chance to ask questions too? Like, and so typically at the very end of the interview, the interviewer will ask you, hey, we're done here now. Or do you have any questions for us? Do you want to kind of describe what that is and why that's important? Why we should always be prepared to answer that those questions with thoughtful questions ourselves?
Yeah, absolutely. So I say the mutual interview because the, I almost want to say the honor, the privilege of interviewing is a privilege both for you and for the business at that point. You are there coming in there with your talent and your abilities and your drive and your passion. So the goodness of that process, the healthiness of that process of being in, walking in the door, it's a boon both for you and the business to be having that dialogue at that point. So you're not there to be grilled. You're not there to be put over the coals. It is a mutual dialogue, and that, you know, hopefully there's a give and take, and it's an organic flow, like you said in our conversation now during the interview. But if it comes to at the end where it's kind of saved up, okay, you know, I've done most of the talking. Now, do you have any questions? That is the point for you to be charged. And there are some lobs like, you know, where do you see the business in 5 years? Things like that. Some standard, if you like Googled what questions they ask during an interview, you'll get a bullet list of a top five. But pick some things at that point that are important to you and ask them. So, for example, is the ability to work remotely something that's important to you? Like working from a coffee shop. So, can I work from a coffee shop? Sure. And then you say, you know, really? What days? How often? What coffee shops? Do you have any that you recommend at that point? So, you know, bring the dialogue down a notch from this is an interview, I'm being grilled, and make it a conversation at that point. And also, by making a conversation, then you should expect genuine answers back. If you say, oh, you can, what days? And they're like, maybe on second thought, maybe it's like once a month. Or, you know, you should get a degree of candor at that point. Once you bring the dialogue down from interview mode into conversation mode, you know, genuine responses are tend to be more conducive at that point. Revealing responses, I should say, on the positive or the negative. Or are people here past 5 o'clock often if work-life balance is important to you? Or, you know, as I was walking in, I saw there were cots in the hallway. Are people sleeping in those cots? You know? There are things like that. I mean, this is your opportunity to get a window into or a peek behind the curtain about what the culture is or things that are important to you. Is career development important to you? You know, can I attend a conference? Do you have any kind of camps? Things like that. So, I'd ask back some questions that you're likely asked on the other side of things. What is it like? What's a time you've been humbled in your work? I mean, why can't you ask that of the people who are asking you? I mean, that's a question I've been asked before. That's a question other people I'm sure have been asked before. Tell me a time in your career, you know, where you experienced some of the, you know, those kind of questions. Why can't you ask those back of the people that are asking them to you? An eyebrow raise or, you know, like, why are you asking me this kind of vibe? That's a red flag straight out of the gate. So if someone is empathetic and views and isn't thinking in terms of a hierarchy, at that point, it's a conversation. I mean, why the hell not? If I'm talking to a VP, if I'm talking to someone who's, not at that level in an org chart, I mean, why can't the dialogue be the same at that point? So it should be natural and fluid. So, you know, we're creating and we're researching, we're testing in a human-centered sense. Why wouldn't the same process of human-centered observation of your potential new collaborator or teammates apply here? So just watch for those cues. You know, we put cameras when we're doing usability testing in a usability testing lab to see, is someone furrowing their brow? Is someone frowning? Is someone having a delightful experience at that point? Put that, your mindset in that same way at that point. Put your webcam on in your brain and observe brow furrowing and observe if you ask about, can I work off site? Is there flop sweat? Is someone giving an immediate impassioned response? Just go in research and observation mode. This is what we're passionate about in our career. This is what we're doing. We're advocating for humans. Research and observation is a part of that. Apply that same, mindset to the interview process.
Oh, so good, Justin. My biggest takeaway so far is treat what you just said. Basically, treat your UX interview like a UX research project, right? Like, that's so good. I'd never thought about it that way. Like, you're researching the culture. You're researching, you're interviewing them too. And have the confidence, by God, defenders. I know, like, out the gate, it's hard to have that confidence because you don't maybe have a lot of wins under your belt. But you know what? I just really want to encourage you to just be confident in this process, because you need to see yourself as somebody, even if you are super green, you need to see yourself as somebody who's going to grow exponentially, and you're probably going to do it once you get your foot in the door, right? If you keep that growth mindset that we always talk about, and that passion and that hunger, because you know what? Skills can be trained, passion cannot. So just, I really love that, Justin. That's awesome. And you were talking about the COTS. And I'm my brain is so weird. Like, I was thinking, like, if you were applying to the Heaven's Gate cult, then bunk beds and Nike tennis shoes would definitely be a requirement for that position.
Man, I don't know how you made that.
I don't know
where
that came from, but
that's astounding.
Yeah. So if you're, you know, that's a requirement. Just keep that in mind. But I think Hale Bopp has long left us. I wrote an article called Don't Be Culture Clubbed, and it was inspired by my, my experience that I've mentioned a couple times here. I'll be sure to link to that in the show notes as well. Justin, I want to throw some questions out that I want, and I'd love your input on these, and tell me, are these good ones? Are these, you know, or what you think of them? But these are some questions I mentioned in the article. But defenders, maybe if you might even want to jot these down and just kind of keep them in mind for when it is your turn, when they say, now, do you have any questions for us? Here's some ideas, some suggestions. What's the culture like here? Tell me about the leadership style and philosophy. Tell me about the emphasis put on employee development through conferences and other training opportunities. And you mentioned, are there remote opportunities? That's a good one to ask. And then here's one to close with, like, what do people like most about coming into work each day? So those are some thoughts. You know, when you ask about, leadership style, like that's how much, that gives you an idea of how much the leadership cares about its people. And again, you're going to want to probably really use your observational techniques and look at, you know, make eye contact to see, because I know sometimes it's easy to kind of fabricate on if you're on the other side. Oh yeah, we're awesome leaders here. You know, like, use your eye contact and your gut feelings. And then the emphasis on employee development. Like I said before, most of your development, if you're green, most of your development's going to come through, you know, being in that job. And you're hungry, defenders. I know you are, because I know I've talked to many of you and you listen to this show. So you have that hunger to grow. So I know you're going to grow. And so keep that in mind. And that tells you how much trust the leadership has on its people. If they do like remote opportunities, for example, and also about development and training. So thoughts on that? Those, Justin.
Those are fantastic questions, Jason. I need to read that article that you had written again, because those resonated tremendously with me. And like I said before, what is the response time on those? Is there pause? Is the response genuine? Like I said, and impassioned, or does, I mean, everyone has a BS detector. What is the, you know, the actual fiber of that response, I suppose I'll say. I mean, does it lean more towards P&L and bottom line being the response towards the manager's perception of why people want to come into work? Or does it lean towards, you know, the things that are more about collaboration and doing good work for people and having a human-centered, charged process internally and in the work people are doing it in a research and UX design capacity? So, you know, like the core thing here, the core thread is, like you said, in terms of summarizing what I noted before, we have to observe and advocate for humans and put ourselves in the shoes of other people, just intrinsically in what we do. So applying that same lens to this process, this should be, you know, a home run for us, just as designers and UX people and developers. So just apply that same lens to this process, and I guarantee you will take something away from it far greater than Googling, you know, the top five interview questions to ask.
Hi, I'm Denise Jacobs, keynote speaker, author, and self-proclaimed creativity evangelist, and I fight for the users. You're listening to User Defenders Podcast with Jason Ogle.
So as we kind of come in for a landing here, I've always wanted to say that at the end of an interview.
Everyone take their seats. Put your seatbelts on.
Here comes the airplane. You're going to say that to your newborn.
Oh, yeah.
So let's, you know, you've done an incredible job, Justin, of helping us understand how to vet a company culture before and during the interview. I want to talk right now as we kind of close here. I want to speak to those who are currently in a UX role and or, you know, maybe they're developers or front end developers, and they're in a design kind of agency environment. You know, I want to speak to those defenders listening who are stuck. They're in a cult. They know their culture is bad, and unfortunately, the blinders may have been on when they got in, as to what it was really like being in their 9 to 5, or even remotely. You know, I mean, there can be a bad culture remotely as well. So I want to speak to those people right now, those designers, those developers, who are just stuck. And they know it, and they're being treated like a cog in a factory instead of a human and a difference maker right now. What advice do you have for those defenders listening?
I suppose I would summarize it in two words, Jason. I can expound upon this, and that is don't settle. Don't settle.
Never.
It sounds like the most obvious thing, looking out for number one, but it can be also the hardest thing because, you know, we're just conditioned to think, you know, this business invested so much in me, and they, you know, they're paying me, and I've been here for so long, or, you know, hell, on the other side of things, I've only been here for a month, but you know, I went through the whole process of, you know, going through interviewing, and I've told all my family and friends, and that could turn into 6 months, and that can turn into 2 years, or that could turn into 6 years. And, you know, it becomes an abusive relationship where that feels like the norm, that, you know, this is just how businesses operate, and this is how I should be treated. Absolutely not. Don't settle. So instead of looking back, I mean, I can, you know, say this with years behind me at this point, instead of looking back on years of compromised work, of industry burnout, you know, this is all we would talk about, seeking out the companies who are doing it right, because they are absolutely out there. The passion for doing your best work is way too precious to be extinguished by an unhealthy creative culture or a negative environment, because not just for ourselves, I said, look out for number one, but the human beings on the other receiving end of the experiences we're creating also can't settle for anything less than the best. I mean, we talk about not just healthy design or effective visual communication or, you know, effective programmatic work, but what about, is accessibility being shortchanged? Is advocacy for people with disabilities being shortchanged? All those kind of things. Procedurally, personally, we cannot afford anything less than the best in terms of being facilitated doing our best work, in terms of doing the best work for the human beings who are, you know, interacting with the experiences we're crafting. You cannot settle for anything less than what is the best for you to do your best design or programmatic work. So if it's a bumper sticker, if it's a t-shirt, if it's a tattoo, don't settle. That is my advice.
Oh, I love it. I've got nothing to add. That's it right there in a nutshell. Just never settle, defenders. You are far too valuable. You are far too important, and you have far too much of a difference to make in this world. And we need you. We need you to do this work. We need you to help make things better. There's always going to be room for improving this world. This world is poorly designed. It's not designed for us, and we need you to get out there and do it, but we need you to be healthy when you do that. You can't do your best work in a terrible culture. It's just not possible. So, Justin, thank you so much for being here. I want to ask you, how can the defenders connect and keep up with you?
Thank you as well, Jason. As usual, I appreciate our dialogue immensely. In terms of connecting, I'm at Pseudoroom, P-S-E-U-D-O, Room, on effectively all social media. So reach out that way. Pseudoroom.com is also my personal site. And then you mentioned my book, Cultivating a Creative Culture. That is the creativeculturebook.com. And like you said, our podcast is on there, Creative Culture Podcast, the latest news, and of course, things having to do with the book. So I would love to stay engaged with everyone who's tuned in, or if you have any feedback, if you think this has been helpful, if you think this has been BS, you know, I of course love to engage with feedback on either side of things so I can evolve myself. Mm.
Yes, yes. Yeah, same here. Tweet your takeaways and tweet your challenges if you have them, or contests with anything we've shared today on Twitter. We'd love to engage with you. And this is a really important conversation, man. This always will be. And I'm thankful to see a lot of companies kind of understand this a lot more, especially more creative driven companies. And I think there has been a nice shift, but there's still much more work to do. And it all begins with leaders, honestly. So, thanks so much, Justin. Again, I totally agree with you. Like I love our conversations. This has been so rich for me. I've learned a lot too. So I thank you. And hey, my friend, as always, I just want to say, fight on, my friend.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to go Google Hail Bop right now as well. It's been a while. I need to catch up on the trajectory of where Hail Bop is at.
Never settle, Defender. Those two words alone really encapsulate this entire episode. The work that you are meant to do is far too important. The difference you are meant to make, the difference we need you to make, is far too important for you to be stuck in a dead-end culture that is doing everything in its power to prohibit you from truly achieving what you are capable of. I hope that everything that was shared today was impactful and can be used as ammunition in your fight to find the right cultural fit. Please tweet your takeaways, Defenders. I'm at User Defenders. Justin is at Pseudo Room. We'd love to engage with you on what was mentioned in this episode. This has been a wonderful series. I'm so glad that I kicked off the season with this series, and I hope it was super rich for you. I'm glad it exists now. It's there for you anytime you need it, Defender. Anytime you need to kind of come back to this information. I mean, like I've said several times probably in the series, even if you're not just trying to get your foot in the door, which I know many of you are, all of us are one conversation away from needing these resources again, from needing to know how to get our foot back in the door, to build an effective portfolio, to interview like a boss, and to find the right cultural fit. So I appreciate you, Defenders. I'm so glad that you're on the other side of this and that you allow me into your earbuds and my guests and this content. And I just couldn't be more grateful. So sometimes I don't say thank you enough. And I thank you for being on this journey with me. I appreciate you. More to come. We're about halfway through the season now. I think the next episode is all about UX writing, which I'm super excited about. So stay tuned. Make sure you're subscribed. userdefenders.com/subscribe. And again, I want to remind you that UD community is live and thriving. And I've just recently begun to, I actually announced recently that we are going to have exclusive trainings for members of the community. So anybody who's in the community will be able to attend these trainings and get better, become better as a result. So please come and join us if you are interested in that. And I'm really going to be tapping into many of the super guests that you've already sort of become familiar with after having listened to the show. So be sure to check it out and get your first 7 days free by visiting community.userdefenders.com. I want to thank Eli Jorgensen for the astonishing artwork. I loved what he did with Justin's. This may, like Darren said, Darren Goldsmith, my show notes guy, he said, this may be one of Eli's best, and I concur. And speaking of Darren, thank you, Darren, for helping me so much with the show notes. It's really allowed me to do more with the show, and I appreciate you. And thanks so much. And thank you, Adobe XD, for sponsoring this episode. It's because of Adobe that I'm able to actually bring you this content. So thank you. And it's a great product. I really, truly love the product. Check it out at userdefenders.com/XD. So anyway, that's that. I appreciate you. And until next time, as always, fight on, my friends. We're out.
I had to.
Oh,
come on.
That was good. I love it. This has been so good, man. I love starting my day out this way, talking to you.
Well, I actually started my day getting a parking ticket, so this this turned things around. Shoot. I tweeted about it. Check your Twitter after this.
I sure will. Oh, that sucks, man. I'm sorry. Shoot.
The lens was I had a spirited discussion with a parking enforcement officer. I'm going to have another spirited discussion with Jason Ogle in about an hour or so.
Oh, well, you know what? It didn't show. Your frustrations didn't show. I would have been frustrated coming into an interview after that. So
I lit a candle in here and I like calm myself before.
Did you get a frothy cup before?
That's
hell
a given.
Yes.
Come on.
Hell yes. All right, brother, I'll let you go. Hey, you get 6 minutes back.
I'll take it.
You can go get another cup of coffee, man.
Yeah, you read my mind.
I'm there with you.